This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
I just felt like it was a little bit of a kick in the balls, to be honest.
It came a lot sooner than I thought that I would be the oldest player on the team.
That's all you got, brother. That's all you got.
The word of the day would have been hyper-realism.
We're bad at soccer, but we're good on a bagel.
Boarding the high line with Rabbi and Red. Talking the rabbits and turning heads. With questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home. Thank you for tuning to Home.
Hello, Rapids fans. You are listening to Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. My name is Matt Pollard. It is the evening of Thursday, June 27th, 2024, recording just after the mess that was that political debate and the USMNT's loss to Panama. But happy Rafael Navajo signing day. He's officially a permanent designated player for the Colorado Rapids and on less money than Palmeiras initially wanted him for. But we're not here to talk about that. Rapids fans, I'm so excited about this Saturday's game. I think there's so much nuance and interesting things to talk about. And for once, I think the Rapids are in a good position to go to LAFC and maybe get a result, or at least not lose 3-4-0. So joining me now to talk about this from the other side, from the LAFC Shoulder to Shoulder podcast, Jonathan, how are you this evening other than American fumbling stuff on the field and in our politics?
I think, look, if, you know, America got enough of one thing today, it's two old guys babbling back and forth at each other. So it's good that we're bringing more of that to the table to try and wash out this Panamanian vile that is upon us at the moment.
Yes, absolutely. We have it's funny. So this year, with some of the players that left, I remember introductory press conference for media day, and Keegan Rosemary was asked about being a veteran. He said out loud, "You know, it's weird being the oldest player on the team. He's 30. It's weird that a lot of fans and people around the club, myself included, are now older than all of the players on the Rapids. Would be nice to have a, I don't know how old John McCarthy is, or like that mid 30s, like hanging around third goalkeeper who's just there for like vibes in the 60K." To still be able to say that he's a professional soccer player. So we don't have that. So ironically, it's two 30-year-olds, which I guess is better than two. Is Biden 80 and Trump in his 70s? Okay, in any case, we have two oldest players on the field this weekend at BMO Stadium. Will be Kai Kamara and Keegan Rosenberry for both sides. One of them's a captain, and both of them are half the age of the next president, and so I feel slightly positive about that. Jonathan, how are you feeling about LAFC? You know, I feel like start of the season was a little bit slow, a little Dennis Bawanga dependent. Bogush has come off, been fantastic, and I feel like every single time LAFC hosts San Jose Earthquakes, you guys always score like four goals and end up winning. I don't think there's a goal of the year because there was no Carlos Vela, but how are vibes as LAFC looks to reestablish and prove, like, yes, they're still probably the best team in the Western Conference?
Look, the run that LAFC are on right now, 10 games undefeated, 8 in MLS, is a high. Fans are very ecstatic about where the team is right now. I think there are some very noticeable question marks around the roster that have existed since the start of the season. And as you alluded to a moment ago, talking about that preseason presser, I think for most people in the black and gold community, that preseason presser started with, okay, where are the signings? We saw so many departures at the end of last season, and we kind of kept expecting that big shoe to drop. We finally got it just recently with the announcement, finally, of Olivier Giroud. So we have that big piece that's coming in 2 weeks after the end of France's Euro trip. But I still think it's a little surprising to a lot of people in the black and gold how few pieces have been added to this roster so far, and an anticipation of what is going to be a very busy summer. So there was this really easy excuse to lay on all of the early season performance that the roster was not complete. So we can accept, well, and look, LAFC did not get off to a terrible start. I mean, they were still hanging around the playoff line on the better side of it for the most part of that. So it's not like all of a sudden
better than Seattle.
We weren't in 12th place panicking. Right. Exactly. So look, there's a big grain of salt to say that that early season performance was very palatable, right? I think we saw things moving in the right direction with a few pieces, and we understood that more pieces were coming. What has been surprising to the LAFC fans is the lack of additions so far in the primary transfer window this season, and yet how well the team has done with what is a relatively short roster by comparison. I mean, LAFC are trotting out a lot of MLS Next Pro talent in order to fill out just the lineup every single week. So a lot of people really thought they weren't going to be able to hold it together for this long, but the performances have been very promising, and hats off to Dolo. Cherundolo has really changed what was a very static 4-3-3 for LAFC under Bob Bradley. It took a year or two for Dolo's system to really be fully implemented. And I think now that we're seeing Dolo's ideology come to fruition, the performance has been incredibly positive, albeit given the fact that the roster is not complete.
What let's start in midfield, because this will be the second game that LAFC will be playing the Colorado Rapids with Kellen Acosta not on either team. And I always felt like he was an important but not a critical or the best piece that LAFC had in that midfield. Maybe some of the tactics that Steve Cherundolo was iterating on was maybe part of that. I don't know that he's had a great game against the Colorado Rapids. I'd have to go back and look at it. Maybe his best game against the Rapids was actually when he was still with FC Dallas. But I think certainly I was sad for Kellen. He didn't get the move to Europe because I know that was what he wanted to. And look, he's on a bad Chicago Fire team. Granted, he's getting paid. So, and he's already won a bunch of trophies, not with the Rapids. So I can understand that. Edward Atuesta comes back. In my opinion, he never should have left. There's a greater narrative of, I think, an interesting comment that maybe in every single year of LAFC's existence, they've had the most significant player leave. If you're talking about Walker Zimmerman in Nashville. But in any case, your thoughts on the midfield, what's Tillman doing well? What's Atuesta doing well as we go up against an improved Rapids midfield with Georgi Mihailovic and Cole Bassett in the double pivot?
The departure of Atuesta was one that really hit the LAFC family pretty hard. He was a beloved figure here. I think everybody wanted him to stay, but you didn't want to hold the guy back, right? So he goes off, has some moderate success in South America, and comes back as a heralded signing. Atuesta has been, I think, by a noticeable margin, the poorest in the midfield for LAFC so far this season. You know, coming back from a much more physical Brazilian league, he's really struggled to keep the cards in the pocket. He's come in on a lot of rough challenges. He's been late on a lot of challenges. And the things that he picked up were not subtlety and finesse while he was away. It was a lot of brutish tactics that he brought back with him. And that stuff just doesn't fly in the MLS the way it does in other leagues. So I think the physicality is really getting to him at the moment. And not being able to use physicality as a defensive tool when you've been beat has meant that he's given up a lot of poor tackles, given up a lot of free kicks in very dangerous areas, and frankly seen far too many cards, whistles, and balls turned over for LAFC's liking. So I think there's a lot of people in the LAFC community that love Atuesta for what he was, but are very confused at why he seems to have regressed in his return. Now, obviously, we'll give him some time, let him get his wings under him. But it has been difficult to watch Atuesta. You know, Tillman was always brought in to be a fourth midfielder. I mean, I don't think he was ever brought in with the idea that this is part of the core three that are going to start an MLS Cup final should you make it to it, right? But as that third defender, he has a lot of really good shuttling skills. I mean, he can bring the ball across the midfield better than most anyone in the LAFC roster right now. So, I mean, just his ability to relieve a little bit of pressure, collect a ball from a six and act as that eight to just get the ball forward, whether he's spraying it out wide or putting it up top, he's been a great shuttler for us. And just being able to take that pressure off, you know, typically Ilya Sanchez or Eddie Atuesta at the back, they're playing the sixes that tend to see a lot of pressure given LAFC's tendency to get very forward. Especially with the outside backs. More on that in just a second. But, you know, and then you have Matty Bogusz, who has absolutely exploded this year. A lot of people, you know, see him playing that false nine for much of the year and sort of consider him as a forward. He is a 10. You know, LAFC have played him primarily as an eight. But I think now that we have a little bit more stability up front with the addition of Kamara, that's seen him move back into the midfield. And he's been the most potent offensive midfield piece for LAFC. I mean, the kid's been cracking bangers left and right. I mean, his partnership with Denny Bawanga has been brilliant. But yeah, I mean, as far as those two defensive mids are concerned, I mean, typically when LAFC is playing a 4-3-3, you know, especially against you guys with a 4-2-3-1, there's going to be an overload in that midfield, right? So how LAFC have really offset the numbers is by using one of the outside backs at either time to come in and play that extra defensive midfield role. So sometimes it'll be a Hollingshead type who's going to get forward and act more as a winger and act more as a forward. But a lot of times it's Palacios or Palencia that have come in, you know, historically throughout LAFC, Palencia this year, and acted a little bit more as that extra midfielder to help get a fourth midfielder there just to alleviate a little bit of that pressure, right? So whenever you're talking about LAFC's midfield performance, you really have to include the outside backs because in Dolo's system, they are so crucial to the other parts of the midfield being able to get forward and playing that attacking role. And so it's been interesting to see, you know, one of the sixes, typically Ilya Sanchez, retreat back and play sort of a sweeper role out in front of the center backs. And that allows a back three to hold down the back line while your outside backs get forward. So in thinking about the midfield and going up against LAFC's midfield, you really have to consider those outside backs because Dolo uses them heavily to tuck into those midfield positions.
Mm-hmm. Interesting stuff you're saying there, Jonathan. There's a lot of nuance that you were describing. That is what the Colorado Rapids were doing in 2021 that had them be a lot successful. I guess Ryan Hollingshead is the Sam Vines, or as we coined it, the Vines back. I guess our equivalent of you guys saying the Beta Fish to refer to Steven Betasher, former LAFC and Colorado Rapids legend. And then Ilya Sanchez doing very Jack Price-like things. Now, granted, I think Steve Cherundolo has proven he's done it at a higher level than Robin Fraser, and it helps when you have more budget, you know, in a great stadium and everything. Talk to me about what's not working defensively. I don't feel like anybody outside of Charlotte this year is getting a lot of clean sheets in MLS, but LAFC are leaking goals at times. I don't know from what I was expecting, looking from afar, that Hugo Lloris has been as good as maybe we would have expected. I think Aaron Long is not as good as what he was with New York Red Bulls. And as some Rapids fans will joke about, there's one fan I'm thinking of in particular whose family is originally from France, and so he supports France when it comes to national teams. He said that Hugo Lloris's career ended when Georgi Mihailovic put that set piece in. I think Hugo Lloris still has a few games left, but what's not working defensively? What are you scared about the Rapids could do to them on Saturday?
On the subject of Hugo Lloris, it's taken him some time to get to fitness this year. I don't think he arrived to camp in the best of shape. Now, given where he was in his career, I think that's understandable when he makes that transition to take a little bit of time off and to let go a little. I think he's been a little surprised, and I think the greater soccer community here in the States as well, been a little shocked at how long it's taken him to get his sea legs. I do think throughout the course of this last 10 game stretch, Lloris has looked a lot better. We've seen him save some pens. We've seen him make some great saves. I think he's starting to get into fitness. So I think a lot of that early season criticism, which was valid and warranted, had a lot to do with the fact that he just, you know, the communication with his teammates wasn't there yet. There's a lot of different languages going on between keeper and LAFC's back line there, right? So bringing in the addition of someone who speaks French to the back line has really been a big help there. Aaron Long has certainly starting to see some father time impacts to him. I think the most frustrating thing about Aaron Long is it's not his defensive ability, which has always been up to standard for the league, but his distribution of the ball has really, really struggled for LAFC. There is another LAFC podcast that constantly harps on him for not being able to pass the ball forward past the defensive mid. He has seemingly the options of back to the keeper, to a center back, maybe to a retreated outside back, or to the six. Those are the only passes that Aaron Long attempts. No route ones, nothing to an outside midfielder, nothing to anyone forward. He's not making line-breaking passes. And frustratingly so at times when it appears people are wide open, there just seems to be a mental block with him where he'll play the ball out wide and let it come down that way. He'll play the ball to the six, but he can't play that long ball. The defensive liability for LAFC this year has been Jesus David Murillo, who a couple years ago burst into the scene and looked like he had defender of the year type ability to him. I think the change in some of the tactics, the change in some of the personnel around him, I mean, look, you take Giorgio Chiellini out of anybody's back line and it's going to look worse the next season. So grain of salt that, you know, look, you take Chiellini out of the equation and okay, it doesn't look as good. And so Murillo is again struggling to adapt to a new goalkeeper, a goalkeeper that's speaking French and his English is a little different, right? So, I mean, I think that partnership has been hard between a Spanish speaker with English as a second language and a French speaker with English as a second language. And that communication piece struggled a little. You bring in somebody with some French-speaking ability, and that's certainly helped out kind of solidify the back line. It's taken them a while to get their communication down. Murillo gets caught in moments, and he's made some very poor decisions. So, I mean, if LAFC are going to get beat from the back line, it's those center backs, and more importantly, it's the distribution of the ball. Throughout the course of this season, under this new Dolo system, you know, LAFC have retreated to a low mid block in a lot of games, surrendered much, much more possession than the black and gold are used to seeing. And as a result, in that low block, you're going to turn the ball over and you're going to have to play it out from the back. And that's where LAFC have really struggled this year. That's where our goal last week came from. And that's where the majority of the goals that LAFC have been leaking in this season have come from. It's turnovers from the center backs to the midfield. If you can pressure those midfield, if you can get at numbers, catching LAFC before the outside backs are able to bomb forward, get those numbers in the midfield, double team the six, turn the ball over. That's how 50% of the goals LAFC have given up this year have come from. I mean, that or, you know, just wait for Jordi Mihailovic to score two in the last 10 minutes and walk away with it with some bangers. But I mean, aside from bangers, that's the key to beating LAFC. You have to counterpress that ball coming out of the back. And as soon as that turnover happens and LAFC gets the ball, if you can swarm them before they can get themselves organized, they have turned over way too many balls and poor passes coming out of the back from the keeper and the center backs going into the midfield. And that's where the goals come from.
The LAFC defensive third is going to be like the Tower of Babel, Jonathan, because on top of all the languages you've got going on, Rafael Navajo coming in with Brazilian, Georgi Mihailovic, I have to believe his father taught him some Serbian as well. And I don't know, maybe Kevin Cabral will be yelling at Hugo Lloris in French. I don't know. I remember asking him after the reverse fixture about what it was like playing with Hugo Lloris. And he said that, you know, he called him a legend and then he just said good game. He understood that Hugo wasn't in a mood to talk, which is better than, say, Andre Shinyashiki, you know, chasing down Zlatan to try and get his shirt. But in any case, it's interesting.
I sit like maybe 10, 15 feet from behind the LAFC home goal there on the north end side with the 32-52. And there are a lot of times, throughout pregame, obviously during the game, you can't hear squat there, but you could hear the goalkeepers communicating with their team. And one of the things that really impressed me about Maxime Crepeau when he first arrived at LAFC is he instantly went back and forth between French, English, and Spanish, right? We had Mamadou Fall, who spoke French, and we had Jesus David Murillo, who spoke Spanish. And then he had his outside backs who were English speakers. And he was boom, 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 back and forth between Spanish, French, English very quickly. And I was very impressed by that, but I kept thinking, gosh, I mean, you got to say everything three times to communicate. So, you know, hopefully LAFC are getting on the same page in that regard. But it's a part of the game that I think we rarely ever talk about, especially when it comes to keepers and communication. It's just the language barrier in global soccer.
Yeah, absolutely. The Rapids had some of that, a little bit of an issue with Andreas Maksu, the Danish center back, whose English is not as good as you might expect from some Scandinavians. And then also you had William Yarbrough was fine English-wise, being an American, but then Marco Ilicha had some issues. So I think things are stabilized with, I think, Maksu being in his second year in MLS. So David Goss' theorem, he's more comfortable, and I think his English has been better. He's never played outside of Europe, so there wouldn't have been a need for him to speak English regularly. And then Zach Steffen he's stabilized the build out. Rapids fans will still complain about his shot stopping, but he's been better the last three games. You know, the only goal the Rapids gave up in the 9-point week was a Lalas Abubakar own goal. It's interesting what you said about some of LAFC's issues, because I have to think that Chris Armas is thinking that the Rapids could go in there and then really press LAFC, because that's something that they've been very good at. Mark Goodman, my podcast co-host, and I have been discussing, Armas still hasn't fully figured out or iterated on what I think he wants the Rapids to be. I think certainly at home games, he wants them to be on top, more ball dominant, but then he's comfortable being a little bit more conservative, like against St. Louis. And obviously, they don't press all the time, but when they do press, they're all out in terms of being very well drilled in what they do, it being very intense in terms of the speed of the runs, and it being very effective. So I do think this game, given what you just said about how Dolo's kind of changed some of the stuff around, that there almost could be a cat and mouse game. I think this has an opportunity. I automatically think, just with how much better the Rapids are talent-wise, that they're going to be way more competitive in this game than they have been at LAFC in the history of this matchup. But I think certainly the fact that, you know, every single other Rapids team pretty much has gone in there flat 4-4-2, absorb pressure, try to do stuff in transition, and one Rapids player makes a mistake, and then eventually LAFC scores a goal. Or unlike it was Gomez, I think, was the striker you guys had last year, who could have had a hat trick in the first 10 minutes and he didn't score a goal. And I don't remember who scored the goals, but it was like 3 or 4 nil, and that was all she wrote for Robin Fraser. Anything else you want to say about that, Jonathan, or shall we talk about Kai Kamara?
Sure. It's a live by the sword, die by the sword thing, yes. Right? I mean, if you all out press LAFC when they're playing it out the back, sure, you might get them to cough up the ball and you might get that goal scored. This is why LAFC are winning 4-2, 5-3 in most of these games, though, because the majority of the time that press, it doesn't work. And now you've overcommitted numbers down, and now you've got to deal with Denny Bawanga running with his hair on fire down the side. And that spells a recipe for disaster. So it's a risk reward for both teams in that situation. But let's talk about Kai Kamara.
Yeah, so we've talked about Bogush. We talked about Dennis Bawanga. I think he's been not up and down by his numbers. It's kind of hard when you're competing.
By the way, he hates it when people call him Dennis. It's literally his number one pet peeve. His name's Denny.
Denny, I apologize. I apologize. We make here at HTHL, Jonathan, we make a really big deal about calling players what they prefer to be called and then also pronouncing it naturally. Most of them we get right. Some of them we get wrong. I am regularly corrected, and regularly there's an argument about how to say Andreas Maksu's last name. But so people, like our listeners, will regularly comment on, like, cringing when I refer to Rapids goalkeeper Marco Ilicha, because I spoke to him and, you know, I said, how do you want me to pronounce your name? How do you pronounce it? And he said, that's how you pronounce it. And so to his Serbian family and to the other Serbians who maybe care about sports in Denver, because we've got a few Serbians on various teams now, not just Nikola Jokic, that pronouncing their names is something that's really, really important. So my apologies, Denny, my apologies to LAFC fans.
Don't worry about it. Okay. Believe me, in my broadcasting role in the, you know, indoor soccer world, mm-hmm. for the work that I do, for your fans that don't know, I do the color commentary analyst position for the Empire Strikers in the Major Arena Soccer League. And I do a lot of cash games and cash tournaments in the indoor soccer world, very off Broadway. But okay. One thing I always try and make sure I ask every player when I'm dealing with a new player and I'm getting ready for a broadcast is, how do you pronounce your name? And how does your mom pronounce your name? And if I figure I'm somewhere in between the two of those, it works. But believe me, I've still gotten players' names wrongs. And then the player will sometimes just change how they want their name pronounced, you know, 3 years into being in the league and throw everything off anyway. So don't even sweat it.
Okay. Yeah. You're touching on another thing for us, Jonathan. We do such a good job of that. We have cultivated, my co-host and I like to brag when a mom of a Rapids player follows us on Twitter. So Debbie Price, who was Jack Price's mom, or Jackie Price's mom, as she would say it. Like, it was such a big deal when she was on Twitter, and like when she would follow a certain member of the Rapids community, that was a really big deal. We did just this past week, because of nice things that we said about Calvin Harris, who got a brace against Montreal. We got Mrs. Harris to follow us as well. So we are growing. We are excited that no matter what we say about the team or our criticisms are constructive, that like we say things that are nice enough or respectful enough that the moms of the players follow us on Twitter and listen to the podcast. Okay, enough about that. Kai Kamara's mom does not follow us on Twitter unless it's her burner account, as far as I know. Jonathan, Kai Kamara was a fantastic player for the Colorado Rapids. Rapids fans remember very fondly him and Diego Rubio scoring goals in that 2019 season that was almost led to a miraculous return to the playoffs. And the Rapids went in against LAFC on decision day, needed a bunch of results to go their way, but most importantly, they needed to beat LA. Tim Howard's final game in MLS, and LAFC scores a goal, and then Kai Kamara brings one back, and then I think it was 3-1, 4-1. I looked it up the other day, and Kai is a bit of a vagabond in MLS. He is a bubbly, vibrant personality. He can also be an extremely salty egomaniac, and he holds grudges. And so his, as we were talking off pod, his exit from the Rapids was one of the more amicable ones. You know, I think he and Robin Fraser are still on speaking terms. I know for a fact that he does not speak to anyone he interacted with in Columbus, and he's probably looking forward to beating Montreal at some point this season. How have you guys enjoyed the cosmic entity that is Kai Kamara? The good vibes, the bad vibes, just all that he is, and maybe also understanding that, you know, as an expansion team, your understanding of Kai is maybe different from fans who have their team has been in the league to where they've seen the maturation and the arc of Kai Kamara that was culminated in, you know, him climbing Mount Donovan this weekend.
I love that. Brilliant way of phrasing it. You know, look, in our seventh season here as LAFC fans, and you know, for anyone in our community that wasn't watching the league prior to that, certainly moments like you bring up stand out as a player that scored a ton of goals, but seemingly the tradesman that was going from team to team to team. And there is a tag that gets applied to any player that has had, you know, basically one team a season or more throughout their career. And there is an implied thought about all of those players. So when you sign a player that's on their 14th team or whatever it is, you know, you think to yourself, okay, look, this person has not been someone teams have fought to keep around throughout the course of their career. And you hear little bits and pieces of the things you talked about there as well, too. So I think he entered the LAFC community with a lot of people having some apprehension about how he was going to fit into the locker room, the culture, the club, all of that. My experience with him personally and everyone that I know that covers the team, you know, in speaking to the players and all of that, he has come in with a much more low-key attitude than he has been known for. Mm. Whether that's maturity, whether that's something that has been coached into his conversations with his fellow players. All the people that I talk to around the club say he's happy-go-lucky, you know, puts in work and expects the other people around him to work, but is not considered that captain's role where he has to be the one to motivate other players by being the bad cop. He gets to be the good cop and has played good cop in the locker room for LAFC with the media and with the fans. He has been nothing but polite, humble, and nice to everyone that we've spoken with. Again, whether that's maturity or coaching, I'm liking the result. What I'm also loving is getting to watch him in an LAFC kit pass Landon Donovan. That was pretty special as well, too. You know, as far as what he does for LAFC, obviously he's not the player he was 5-10 years ago. That's obvious. He still presents an aerial threat. He's still got a clinical boot inside the box, and he can still be another player to help facilitate the ball, move it around, understands players' movement and space and all that stuff perfectly as a veteran, and has filled in that veteran role. And let's be honest, he's just keeping those boots warm for Olivier Giroud. And mm-hmm. if you just need someone for a few months, and at this point, maybe, you know, a month and a half to keep those boots warm, go ahead, get the guy who's the second leading all-time scorer in the league. That's a pretty darn good stopgap fill signing there.
Yeah. I don't know how much to your point, Jonathan. I'm pretty sure Wondolowski played through LAFC's existence, so you have an idea about him. But as someone who's been following the league for over a decade, and then to hear Kai's comments, just knowing their story arc, the way that, you know, Wando and Kai played not alongside each other. They were never teammates to my knowledge. Maybe one year in San Jose, a long, long time ago. But in any case, playing D2 college soccer, working their way, having to earn it coming into the league. Kai being a vagabond playing around. Wando playing his entire career with San Jose. And just to know their friendship and, you know, Kai's comments to your point about how Kai's just this weird duality of character. I'm going to make maybe a weird analogy, but like I see so much like covering Zlatan and then being able to interview him post game when LA Galaxy lost to the Rapids 2-1, whenever that was. And then to hear his comments, for me, it was really interesting to just think about like the dichotomy or almost the thought that like he's playing a character or there's the macho version of himself that he needs to turn on at times. And then like the grounding force as well. And I'm not comparing the two people, certainly, even though canonically Zava ends up playing for LAFC because, you know, you guys love your avocado toast out there. But I think one of the interesting things for me as a member of the media is to see the duality of the characters or what they are on the field versus what they are off the field and how they deal with that. And I think some people think that's weird. Some people think it's crazy. Kai is a bit of a diva. He can be, you know, bipolar. I'm not a psychologist, but, you know, he has multitudes to his personality. But for me to just see the difference between the person who doesn't get to take a penalty for Columbus Crew, and basically that ends his time at the club when he could have won an MLS Cup, had been there forever. Just to see the complexity of who he is as a character, I think is really interesting. I don't know that it makes him a more moral or a more likable figure. I do think it makes him a more interesting character in ways that there are, you know, interesting characters from Game of Thrones that are complex, but also have terrible moments. And maybe at times we are rooting against. And so to see Kai in that moment pass Landon Donovan, and when he could brag about passing an LA Galaxy player or passing a player who had, was born with a silver soccer spoon in his mouth, Landy cakes and everything, compared to, you know, started from the bottom, now Kai and Wando are here kind of a things. Rather than make a big deal about that, he said, I just want to be 1 and 2 with Wando. And if I catch him, great. And if I don't, I just wanted us to be there. I think maybe shows some maturity, or at least the side of Kai that is certainly likable. And I'm sure at some point, you know, Denis Bowanga will not pass the ball to him, will shoot himself, and then Kai will be extremely frustrated and we'll see the diva and the cycle will continue. This is who Kai is on some level. I can appreciate it certainly more from afar, but, you know, we'll see about that.
I think one thing about working around players as you have, right, when you get to start experiencing players, not only in their media face, but in their private face as yes. well too, and you get to see them behind the curtain, you know, that sort of Jungian dichotomy becomes very ever present. And there is an insane amount of ego, drive, will, personality that it takes to become a professional athlete, right? And this happens all the time, where that fire that's inside them catches something else and it burns other places. And sometimes it's bridges, right? And we see that happen all the time, right? I work in Studio City here in Hollywood. I deal with a lot of famous people. It's the same thing there as well, too. The person who is on TV, the person who's on screen, the person who's giving those interviews on talk shows is completely different from the actual person around town in their real life, right? Some of them are really nice people. Some of them are really terrible people, but they all do a pretty good job of selling it when the camera's on, mm-hmm. right? And I think at the bare minimum, that's what's asked of them. But it's also part of this weird relationship we have with superstars, where we expect them to just be these model citizens and everyone has to be the perfect Superman Boy Scout, right? And they turn out to be a little more Homelander when you get to know them. And that's kind of part of the fun of it.
Yeah. Like, you know, thesis statement here is Kai Kamara is a complex, flawed human being. And sometimes he gets extremely frustrated and does stuff that are unprofessional that he would regret. And in theory, he moves on from. And that's not a reason to demonize him or to not be a fan of him or root against him if he's on your team or root for him if he's not on your team. I think it just shows that he's a human being and he's flawed. And I think that makes athletes more relatable. And that makes Kai more relatable. And I think a more likable person, because he's not this robot or a produced, you know, version of himself like Zlatan Ibrahimovic or Alexi Lawless are when they know they are being watched, so to speak. Kai is unapologetically himself, and that person is just a multitude of different personalities. You know, Riley from Inside Out 2, you know, has, you know, 10 personalities as she's going through puberty, and Kai Kamara has probably however many goals Kai Kamara has scored. That's how many of those different emotions that are in there that are trying to control him, and sometimes somebody hits the wrong button.
I feel like we're hyping on Kai Kamara. tomorrow a lot. He's been overwhelmingly nice with me and the people I know. So I just want to state that first and foremost. But look, if any of the superstars that you dream of and put their jerseys on your wall out there, if you think any of those are perfect people, don't ever meet them.
Yes.
You will find out that they are all flawed people, just like all of us. And it might shatter some dreams for you. My apologies.
Mm-hmm. Jonathan, let's talk from a Rapids perspective. LAFC fans, obviously, you're very focused on LAFC. You've got a neighbor that you like dunking on just slightly to the south of you. From afar, like, what have you seen in the Rapids? You know, the Rapids normally aren't on your radar, I would assume, except with the exception of when LAFC is playing them. What have you seen from them? Are LAFCs talking about, you know, do the Rapids register and, oh, they're a better version of themselves? Real Salt Lake is a threat. Give Rapids fans perspective on what you've seen from the team to maybe validate some of the results this year.
I think a lot of times with Colorado throughout the course of LAFC's existence, Colorado hasn't been the strongest team in most of those seasons, right? This year, you guys are a particularly strong team. We don't have to look very far down the table to find the Colorado Rapids name on it, right? So I think anytime a team is in, you know, those top playoff contention teams, you're going to start to pick up on the radar for everybody. And I think LAFC fans have been paying a lot of attention, you know, especially to Jordy Mihailovic, because, you know, we felt the sting from him most brutally recently, right? And it's been an interesting run of form. I will say that the overarching opinion in the black and gold community is that, yes, you guys have won three in a row. You've outscored your opponents 9-1. As you mentioned, an own goal was that only one goal. But look, those three teams you guys beat were all bottom of the table teams. Those three wins account for half of your wins in the course of this season. If you look at the other four games behind those three games, those are all top of the table teams. You tied one, you lost three. You were outscored by five goals in that four game stretch, right? So when it comes to beating teams at the top of the table, that is not happening for the Colorado Rapids. When it comes to getting big results on the road, I mean, with the exception of St. Louis, I think there is a lot of confidence in LAFC. I mean, especially our record at home is 10-0-2. We have not been beaten at home. We have two draws and 10 wins. So, I mean, I think there's a lot of confidence from the LAFC side who says, look, Colorado is a good team. They have good pieces. We've seen what those good pieces can do to you. At home, with this current team, there is a lot of confidence around this particular game. I think Steve Cherundolo in his press conference today did a really good job of tempering those expectations, saying this is a much better Colorado Rapid team than he hears a lot of people giving credit to. And he feels like, look, if LAFC were to come out of this with a tie, that would be a good result, especially because for the black and gold, this is not an important game. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's a home game. Yes, it's against another playoff-worthy division team. But right after you guys on 4th of July, we head up to Pasadena, California to the Rose Bowl to take on that other team that plays in the Southland, LA-adjacent area. So there are a lot of eyes that are already on the Rose Bowl in the 4th of July and the spectacle and logistics. I mean, as far as the 32-52 is concerned, I mean, so much right now is working to try and iron out all the issues that are around a derby game like that. So there are a lot of eyes that are already looking past this game. So that's a big plus, right? And if the coach looks past this game as well too, especially with the roster that he puts out there, relying on the fact that they're going to be at BMO with the 32-52 and the home field environment, I think there are a lot of people who are writing this game off. And so I appreciate the fact that coach came out today and tried to temper those expectations. It has done very little to affect the sentiment of the black and gold community, who still feel very confident going into the weekend.
Wow. Way to just can be a complete buzzkill here, Jonathan. I guess what I'm just looking forward to, you know, again, I tweeted this out. So, you know, we're going to say this out loud. I've definitely from Burgundy Wave posted this at some point. Or did I schedule it? I might have not actually tweeted this out yet. Okay, here we go. So we had media availability with Keegan Rosenberry on Tuesday after training. And so Keegan was asked about LAFC and kind of the complexities there. And, you know, he commented that the team hadn't won there. And so, quote, we haven't had success there as a team. We've got a bit of a different way about us this year. I think measured, but definitely true. And so then I recount 2018 to 2023. This is every game, Rapids at LAFC. So excluding the ones here where LAFC is sleepwalked wins and occasionally the Rapids score a goal on a set piece, Danny Wilson, Georgi Mihailovic. So 2018 was a 2-0 LAFC win. 2019 was that decision day, Kai Kamara scoring in a 3-1 victory for LAFC. 2020, no game because COVID. 2021 was a 2-1 victory for LAFC. I remember that being 2-0 and then Michael Barrios scoring recently. So he's one of the two goals the Rapids have. 2022, 3-0. 2023, 4-0. So five losses for the Rapids at BMO Stadium and an aggregate score line of 14-2. Yes. Yeah. And the two Rapids players who've scored at LAFC are no longer with the team. And one of them now plays for LAFC. So, Jonathan, fun little tidbit that again shows the humanity and the complexity of Kai Kamara. If you want to go back and Google Colorado Rapids plague game, the Prairie Dogs in the.
Oh, yes.
You know about this. So, that was a game against CF Montreal. Georgi Mihailovic's future team and Kai Kamara's future team. It was a 6-3 win for the Rapids, and the opening goal was a Kai Kamara own goal, a header that if he had scored that on an attacking corner, he would have been extremely proud of. And his opening statement was asked about, he got asked about his hat trick and everything, and he said, "Didn't I technically score 4 goals?" So Kai Kamara, typical striker, ego logic, his own goal should count towards his goal total.
I'm definitely sensing some spice between you and Kamara. We spent half this pod ragging on him. It's not stopped. It's come.
Yes.
Back.
Yeah. So, okay. So in any case, I think from a Rapids perspective, I think you're certainly hoping for a better performance. I think you're absolutely hoping compared to years past, the Rapids go there and try to do something. They don't play small, or they don't play like a poverty franchise minnow going up against the big bad LAFC and losing. I think certainly to not concede a goal, I'll say just in the opening 30 minutes would be an improvement on these last year. And I'm hoping for almost a playoff atmosphere. You know, the Rapids ended up losing the second leg of the Rocky Mountain Cup on May 18th, but, you know, they were up 2-0 at one point, and that was a playoff atmosphere. And so I know the 32-52, at least on TV, I've never had the pleasure of attending yet, is absolutely fantastic. So to have a great atmosphere and then maybe a Rapids team that's ready to come in and give an LAFC team that's looking ahead, maybe rotating that squad, maybe a next pro player. A next pro LAFC player is in, I think certainly would make for an interesting one, and one that the Rapids are hyped on, even if LAFC fans are looking differently. Jonathan, I did want to ask, give me a next pro player that Rapids fans should be aware of. We watched a lot of Rapids 2 last year because of Ollie Larraz and Remy Capral and a bunch of great guys who've moved on to great opportunities. Who on LAFC could be making the jump up off the bench or maybe a rare start on Saturday?
Nathan Ordaz and Eric Duaneus are the two that have seen the most minutes for LAFC. It's a midfielder and a forward. Young, small-framed, Latin-style players, lots of quick skill work, not very strong defensively, but they're fast. And they can work into those tight spaces, you know, break down in between, get into those slots in between center backs, and they can wreak havoc there. If you get physical with them, you can muscle them out of the game. And so if there is a big physical matchup there and it's exploited, it is going to be difficult for those two to come in. I don't anticipate there would be a start up front, but in the midfield, it is possible. LAFC really only have 4 midfielders without including some of this fringe MLS next pro talent. So those are the two that are most likely. The one that has really been the most intriguing for LAFC this year is a German forward by the last name of Müller. So obviously anyone who is a Demanschaft fan has been keeping eyes on the last name Müller. But he has performed really, really well for LAFC too, scoring a ton of goals. He showed up, got his first senior team squad goal as well too. And when he subs in, he is an electric, fiery player up top. And that's a really fun one to keep an eye on. But I think we are more likely to see Duaneus or Ordaz in this game. Only player that won't feature will be Kike Oliveira, who is still on Copa America duties.
Okay, good stuff. I think that'll do it for the most part. Jonathan, give us a prediction. We won't hold you to it, and we won't bring it up again if you're completely wrong. I should point out, my co-host wrote an article for the Denver Post, one of these home games for the Rapids, about how the Rapids were doomed and it was going to ruin their season, and the Rapids ended up winning 1-0 on a Danny Wilson goal. We have a joke, actually, that every single time LAFC comes here, we predict a horrible loss, and it ends up not being that, and then the entire fan base just dunks on us. So that is the level of seriousness with which we take predictions here at Holding the High Line.
LAFC seem like they are just inevitably doomed to lay an egg, right? And given that the match against Galaxy is coming up next, this is such an obvious game for it to be, you know, your Akbar moment, so to speak. I feel like I'm the only person in the LAFC community who's like, this game feels like a trap, and everybody else is like, nah, this is going to be a cakewalk. I think this is very likely to be a high scoring affair. And so I wouldn't be surprised if it's 3-2, 3-3. So just in favor of black and gold, I'll go 3-2 LAFC, but it would not surprise me if we had a 2-2 or 3-3 result.
Mm-hmm. I said on the podcast earlier this week with Rabbi that I almost the if the performance is good, but the result is almost a disappointment, I would prefer that to it being the other way. The Rapids coming in, playing small, playing defensive, and just smash and grabbing, you know, a 1-0 win, very MLS, you know, after dark chaos. The Rapids have like 0.3 XG, LAFC has like 3.7 XG, and somehow the Rapids win 1-0. I would almost not prefer that to the Rapids going toe-to-toe with LAFC, having it be an absolute slugfest, and then Bowanga scoring a golazo in the 85th minute to win it narrowly 3-2, and it could have gone either way, at least in terms of this match being a barometer test, in terms of how the Rapids have reset and regained their form with the 9-point week after the international break, but against lesser teams. I would like to see a great performance against a great team on the road in MLS. The Rapids have had two good performances at Real Salt Lake. They were 10 minutes away from having two really good ones in terms of getting wins, but I think this will be a real test of, this will be, I think, a dress rehearsal for a situation the Rapids would be in if they make the playoffs in terms of a road situation. And so I'm just excited to see them not shrink in the moment and just live up to that, even if they end up falling short in the end, because one team has, you know, a more talented team, even though the Rapids did just drop $3.5 million on their DP number 9 from Brazil. Jonathan, where could people find...
I mean, LAFC's ability to score at home, I think rooting for a 1-0 is you're going to have to outscore LAFC, but it's not going to be 1-0. Not at home. LAFC very rarely get shut out at home. I mean, they have one of the best home field records in Major League Soccer. I would expect them. In fact, it would be shambolic if they didn't score a goal in this game.
I wasn't going to put Zach Steffen on my fantasy team this week, but thank you for the affirmation nonetheless. Jonathan, where can people find you, find your content, tell people about Shoulder to Shoulder?
So Shoulder to Shoulder, you can find us at LAFCS2S on all your social media platforms. If you want to follow me and learn way more about indoor soccer than you probably care about, I am at Boozology, one word. I work as a sommelier in my day job in the Hollywood Hills and moonlight as a soccer broadcaster in the evening. So that's where you can find me.
Jonathan, thank you for standing face to face from me, and I look forward to seeing what the Rapids and what LAFC do shoulder v shoulder. I don't know. I messed that up. Listeners, we'll see you next week.